this is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
can dig it.
Stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. We made it through another snowstorm, even though this one was pretty mild compared to the last one.
You're referring to this as a snowstorm?
No, it really wasn't. We got a dusting compared to last week.
Yeah, you know, when you look out the window and you see, you know, it, you don't know right away, especially early in the morning. All you know is you see this snow and it's covering everything. And if I hadn't have known that it was only going to be a small amount of snow, I probably would have panicked. But it's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm almost on board. You can say that the snow was mild, but it turns out the highways were accident-ridden, including out here in Waukesha on Worland Boulevard. I just spent some time taking a very strange route to bypass a big intersection collision. So turns out doesn't take much snow for Wisconsin drivers to forget.
No, man. What happens is the people act like they're the only ones who have somewhere to go. And you know, what I don't ever understand about it is when you put yourself in a situation where you're causing all this havoc to try to get to wherever it is you're going. And the risk is you're not going to get there anyway. But the other aspect of it is you're going to wind up, you know, in some kind of collision, and you're not getting there anyway. And the damage, you know, far exceeds you trying to get to where you're trying to go because you're so important. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and these people don't know how important I am, for God's sake. They're in my way.
that's really what it is, Sandy. But listen, we got a lot to talk about this morning, as always. But I want to make an announcement, a very big announcement. You know, next Friday, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., we're going to be joined by United States Senator Ron Johnson. He's going to be in the studio with Sandy and I. Sandy, are you going to make sure you get a haircut and a shave and
quite
dress
the,
appropriately?
Quite the contrary, actually. Yeah, I'll dress appropriately. I think it's interesting. I think it's a tribute to both our network and to Ron Johnson, because, you know, our network isn't exactly right-leaning, so Ron Johnson's willing to come on and take calls from listeners, and so I presume that he'll get some of those, and we intend to ask all the sorts of questions that anyone ought to get asked about any of the issues, so I think it's going to be an interesting show.
Yeah, he is going to take calls, and so I'd ask the callers, you know, to be brief and, you know, and concise about what it is you want to say to the senator. And so, you know, the monologues will be done by Sandy and I. No, you know, it's not like Senator Johnson is a guy who doesn't talk much, right? You know, I mean, he clearly has something to say.
Yeah, he talks at least as fast as he thinks.
Okay. Let me go here, Sandy, before Donald Trump, you know, told the courts yesterday that every president should be fully immune or have, you know, immunity for whatever they've done during the time that they were the president. Now, you know, Sandy, you're the barrister, you're the attorney. It's what he's asking. I mean, it just appears to the average person that that's an insane ask, because there's so many different things, and we kind of know why he wants this, because he kind of wants it retroactive, right?
Well, I think the crazy argument they have is that unless the president is convicted in an impeachment proceeding by the U.S. Senate for something he does during his presidency, that he is immune from any kind of prosecution. But I mean, the problem is, if you've gone to law school, you understand that you always have to go out to the logical extreme to see what you think of it. Okay, so let's say the president during his presidency plots and schemes for the murder of whatever, someone who's lent him money who he's not going to repay, his wife, whatever. He plots and schemes for the murder of it, and the person dies, and the discovery that the investigation to determine who committed the crime isn't completed until after the president is out of office. Okay, he's no longer subject to impeachment. Is he now still immune? I mean, that's the craziness of it. You know, he orders a SEAL team to assassinate whoever it is that's running against him for his second term. Is he immune? You know, you have to go to the logical extreme, and his request begs everyone to do that.
You know, Sandy, it is clearly it's not going to happen, right?
Well, I would like to think.
Sandy, you're hemming and hawing. You mean it's Sandy? You're hemming and hawing.
Well, I'm not the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm not sure that I think the same way that the U.S. Supreme Court thinks.
Sandy, you leave open the possibility that this could possibly happen.
Well, I worry. I worry that it could happen. But I think that his request, being as open-ended as it is, unlimited, not limited to his official duties, because they're basically saying that anything a president does during his term in office is part of his official duties. I fear that, there are those on the Supreme Court who have written articles about how they think there ought to be a strong executive. The part of the whole conservative movement is premised on putting into the executive office a lot of power. And so, I am worried.
Yeah, that's not, Sandy, what I think we wanted to hear. It sounds so absurd that any other time in history, you would think that this would be an impossible ask, right? Sandy, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, so any other time in history, we'd think this would be an impossible ask, but it's just the way things are right now that, you know, you say you're worried that this could possibly happen.
I am worried. Yeah. I would predict it won't happen, but I am also predicting the Supreme Court would like to find a way to wiggle enough to give Trump more or less what he's asking for. The problem is that he understands, and his lawyers understand, that what he's asking for really requires that he have complete immunity, that a president have complete immunity for all conduct during the presidency, because pretty clearly his conduct in trying to affect the election results was not part of his official duties as president. It was rather part of his duties as a person running for office.
So, and he probably would want this to be retroactive, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh, that's what he's talking about. Yeah, he's talking about it. And retroactive for everything else. You know, who knows what else he knows what else he did during his 4 years, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is out there in the open, but I'm sure there's some things even worse that, you know, we'll soon find out about. But it really is kind of an unbelievable thing that we're in a time and place where we have a president of the United States who clearly has committed some crimes, and there are people who ignore the crimes that he's committed and still say, that's my man. That's the guy that I'm going to support. At the same time, we're clamoring and complaining about right and wrong and law and order in the society. I am really just beside myself that this could possibly even take place in our nation. But clearly, we're on the precipice of maybe that happening. I don't know, you know, if this is not enough. I mean, what do we need to see? We see the president right now just acting a fool. I mean, what else can you say? In court right now, he's already been found guilty of having sexually assaulted Carol, I forgot her first name. But anyway, we said, what's that?
So is Donald Trump.
he forgot her name as well.
Yeah.
But so he's already been accused and actually not accused, but he's.
Well, this, in a civil trial, he was.
They found him guilty.
In a civil trial, they found that he had. It was not guilty of a crime because a civil trial doesn't deal with that, but they found him more likely than not to have done it.
And yet he's still just battling it out. I mean, Sandy, what does he get out of sitting in courts all day?
Well, I think he's decided that his polls get better the more he's viewed as a martyr being prosecuted in court by. Who the solid? But this is a private citizen bringing this action. This isn't anything he can accuse Joe Biden of orchestrating.
All right, got to go to a hiatus. 844-967-2789. You know, it's Sandy Williams. It's Earl Ingram. Friday on the Earl Ingram Show. We'll return.
Sunny. Yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny. You smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you, Sunny. Thank you for the sunshine bouquet, Sunny. Thank you for the love you've brought my way. You gave to me your all in all, and now I feel 10 feet tall. Sunny one so true, I love you.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, you know, there was a couple things you wanted to talk about.
Well, you know, I was struck, all the news for the last evening and this morning is about the Uvalde and the Attorney General's, the investigation of the Department of Justice that took nearly 2 years to try and figure out what went wrong in Uvalde. And, you know, I think Merrick Garland privately to the parents said the thing that really went wrong, which was he said, you know, I have to fault the federal government because we didn't implement legislation to restrict access to the kind of guns that were used by this guy. And really, I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, how do you deal with someone who's got an automatic weapon, has gone into a school with the intent to use it to kill, I mean, that's a thorny problem. That's a battlefield problem. That's a, you know, you would have to expect all of the police to be trained at the same level as the military, willing to throw their lives in front of the gunman and to basically spend their own life for the purpose of saving the children. Now, that's what police do sign up for, dangerous duty. But the kind of danger that's imposed by a shooter here is extraordinary. And let's face it, the real problem, the real mistake here is that the United States is a country that has 20 million AR rifles in the hands of private citizens. I mean, that's the issue. That's the problem. That's the problem that police face. And I'm surprised that police aren't more actively involved with opposing the access of American citizens to essentially assault rifles, the things that endanger them, but also endanger the American public.
You know, Sandy, that battle is kind of like the border conversation.
Right.
You just aren't going to get people to look at it from the perspective of what's in the best interest of the American people and the safety of our, you know, individual liberties and freedoms somehow outpace what's in the best interest of the American people.
Well, I mean, I think the American people are still stuck in the Wild West in many respects. I mean, if you look at the number of people incarcerated per capita in America, we're far greater than any other country in the world, including the countries we point at as being totalitarian.
Very lawless, right.
Totalitarian states where you're in danger of being incarcerated. But we have far more people incarcerated. We have far more people killed by guns than anybody else in the world. We could probably match the sum total of the rest of the world by the people that are killed here in the United States with guns. The number of guns held by citizens in America is extraordinary. It's almost two guns per person in the United States. That's the level of possession of firearms as compared to every other country, which is far, far less.
But, Sandy, you know, that conversation on guns has not even broached the conversation that has been discussed in our nation over the last 6 months.
Well,
guns have been...
Well, it's interesting, though, but if you really hark back to the 1950s and 60s, the number of guns in the country was far less. The conversation about it was far less strident. The NRA was actually a hunting organization, not an organization simply dedicated to the production and sale of guns. And there was far less stridency and emotion associated with the discussion surrounding the Second Amendment right to guns. Okay, and this has all developed since the 1970s, and it really has been something that Wayne LaPierre had a lot to do with and the NRA in terms of generating all of the heat behind the notion of gun rights. And it's become part of a liturgy that is about a fear of government and a whole lot of things that just were not part of the discussion in America or part, I think, of the initial Second Amendment right.
So I never told you, but I had an opportunity to interview Wayne LaPierre a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Arrogant guy. Arrogant guy who didn't hear anything. It was the fact that he was this guy sitting on high on a hill, and how dare anybody challenge him because he was representing everybody's Second Amendment rights.
Well, he really did create a huge movement through the NRA. The NRA became something it wasn't, and it became a super powerful political force through the combined might of both his outlook and the NRA's focus, as well as its conjunction with gun manufacturers, and the total power of those two in Washington became way disproportionate.
So, Sandy, are you saying then that based on what happened in Uvalde, the law enforcement officers who they clearly stated did not do their due diligence in what transpired, you're not dissolving them of?
No, I'm not absolving them. I'm not absolving them of. But you have to understand that we've got law enforcement people put into the position of their own life being taken. If they're the first one through the door, into a room with a guy with an AR rifle, and depending on how they're equipped. I mean, you know, we had the same thing happen here with the shootings at the Sikh temple, and there was several different officers who reacted differently to the situation. It's an extreme endangerment, and it's asking a lot of people to be able to predict how they will be able to behave in that circumstance. And these people obviously weren't well trained in the process. And sure, there was undoubtedly police failure that could have solved the problem. But let's face it, the heart of this problem was the fact that there was a guy in a room with a bunch of children and an automatic rifle.
So you're saying the police aren't the Marines?
Well, yeah, I mean, the police aren't the Marines, and they're not the Marines when they're called out of the blue with something suddenly transpiring on 2nd and Hickory,
right,
or whatever the address is. It's just expecting a lot of our police, and so, I'm sure that there could have been different conduct that could have come up with a different outcome. And it's certainly good to do a lessons learned analysis. I'm sort of sorry that it's called an investigation, because that sounds like it's in some kind of criminal analysis, when what we've got is a bunch of human beings faced with a situation that was really dire, and now we need a lessons learned.
All right, 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
Yesterday, my life was filled with rain and sunny. You smiled at me and really, really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Well, hello there. My, it's been a long, long time. How am I doing? You really want to know? Oh, I guess I'm doing fine. It's been so long now, but it seems like it was only yesterday.
This guy had one of the greatest voices.
Ain't it funny?
Ever. His name is
Joe Hinton. It's so funny how time.
Yeah, he does have a great voice.
Slip right away.
You know, and, this is one of my all-time favorite songs. And listen to that big band, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he there's a lot. This is a cover, and a lot of great people did this song, but it's a great job.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You may join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And if you're just joining us, we made an announcement that next Friday, in the 8 o'clock hour, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, we're going to be joined by United States Senator Ron Johnson in studio, and we'll be taking calls. So, Sandy, half of recent U.S. inflation is due to high corporate profits report finds. I thought that the main inflation was because the Democrats were spending too much money.
Well, yeah,
what
happens is that when there is a bit of inflation and the public understands there's an excuse to raise prices, corporations that have what you call market power, where there isn't perfect competition in the marketplace, seize the opportunity to raise prices even more and to increase their profit level. And that happened in groceries. That happens, as we can watch, even in gasoline to some extent, even though gasoline is a commodity. And the reason is that, for instance, in the grocery business, we've had a substantial reduction in the number of grocery stores nationally, the large grocers that sell. And so each of them has some what's called market power. Market power being the notion that if they raise their price some, there isn't a competitor right there sitting next to them ready to cut the price down and take business away from them. And so if you don't have that kind of price competition in the marketplace, then corporations like grocery stores can use the opportunity to raise prices and raise profits. Even though what should happen in a competitive environment is when the price of oranges goes up because of the commodity price of oranges, the price of oranges will go up by the amount of the commodity price increase, but the profit level associated with selling an orange wouldn't go up because there's competitors out there who will say, look, if you raise your price for those oranges too much, I'm going to undercut you and you know, you'll lose sales. So what's happened in the United States is that there's been an increasing amount of market power in some particularly important areas like groceries, for instance. And I'm surprised that the U.S. Department of Justice has allowed some rather large mergers to occur in the grocery business.
You know, we're just looking at Albertson and Kroger.
Kroger, yeah. Two of the biggest.
The biggest ones.
Right.
But Sandy, I thought these checks and balances that used to exist in our country, they're eroded. How do we then control any of this anymore?
Well, I mean, that's the problem. If you let marketplaces become imperfect, okay, if a marketplace can't control, doesn't have enough competition to control prices within the marketplace, you end up with a problem that maybe requires, first of all, the you could have the antitrust division of the Department of Justice come in and try and break up those two big suppliers of groceries and make them smaller again and see that that they might start competing with one another. I mean, the whole reason that Albertsons would merge with Kroger's is so they can shut the Kroger's down that are competing with the Albertsons, right? They can try and create more market control in the various markets where they all exist. Well, that's very anti-competitive. And so if you can't foster more competition, what do you have? You have left government price controls. Well, that's an anathema to the whole system that we have in place. So it's really vital, and it has been vital for a long time, that the American processes properly regulate markets to make sure that they're competitive. That's coming from a free market economist. That's me. And the problem with what's happening in America and with the control of by K Street, the lobbyists of government policies, is that these big corporations are able to defeat the processes of making sure that there's competition in the marketplace, and it's gonna kill the golden goose.
So Sandy, our only opportunity as the citizenry is those representatives that we have put in office, that we hold them accountable to do what they should be doing. Because even with what you just said, with all of that eroding, they still allowed Kroger and Albertson to merge.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
shouldn't that have been prevented from happening?
Well, yeah, and that's really the Department of Justice. That's lays at the feet of the whatever administration it is that controls the Department of Justice. But the public and the political forces have basically cowed the antitrust division, because they will constantly argue that it's going to cost jobs if you get in the way of this merger, or it's going to make this American competitor less competitive in the world market. Well, that's certainly not the case with grocery stores. Grocery stores only have local markets; they don't have international markets. And so, you know, we need to wake up the antitrust division, and we need to wake up the regulation of competition in American marketplaces, so that we make sure that American markets are competitive, so that we have all the advantages of free market competition, the thing that every conservative ballyhoos about. You know, free market competition is a really good thing, but you have to make sure you have competitive markets.
So Sandy, we're witnessing the damage that this is doing to the middle class, as you always like to talk about.
Right.
We're witnessing this. This is part of why the middle class is suffering the way it is, and yet those entities that are supposed to prevent it are silent.
Well, it's happening across our economy. The health industry. There are portions of the health industry that are thriving. Okay, the profits are going up in the circumstance of prices going up. And it shouldn't be that way. You know, we should have effective marketplaces in which profits are not a direct proportion to price, but rather are the result of a competitive pressure. And it should be true in the commodity markets that profits are razor thin. You know, if, in a commodity, meaning that you sell a lot of them, the profit on each thing you sell should be razor thin, because that's the way commodity markets work because of the pressure of competition.
So, Sandy, these are the kinds of questions that, you know, we'll be certainly asking the good senator when he's in, because he clearly is in a position to know that this stuff is going on.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that the U.S. Senate is part of, and I think the Republican Party should be very actively involved with wanting to make sure that marketplaces are competitive. And that's a bit more difficult because they are also typically very interested in and involved with the ownership side of the businesses that would be regulated to make sure that there's competition. You know, for a business, competition is an unpleasant reality. You know,
right.
It's something that they have to fight and have to succeed within. And of course, the less competitive a marketplace is, the better off a big corporation can be.
But businesses know what capitalism is wrought. They know that that's a part of the business of what they're doing in a capitalistic market, right?
Well, that's why Adam Smith worried about businesses getting so big that they might have their thumb on the scale of government that should otherwise regulate the marketplaces. I mean, Adam Smith in the late 1700s, one of the earliest of the marketplace economists, worried about businesses being able to affect government in a way that would create or allow markets to exist that were not adequately competitive. It was very prescient because it's a circumstance we have today in many marketplaces.
You know, we'll leave that discussion there, but Sandy, there's just so much more there because people, I never thought the corporations, because all that I've been hearing and all that I've been reading is the government's been spending too much money and they've been putting too much money into the economy. But this is the first that I've read about corporations, you know, kind of being a part of it.
I think that there's been there's been talk of gouging. Okay, price gouging is another term. It's the vernacular term for raising profits at a time when there's scarcity. Okay, that's called price gouging. Because if you weren't gouging, you'd be just putting the same profit margin on top of the increased cost. And the word gouge would come out of that sentence.
So Sandy, I guess what I'm saying is I don't expect the corporations to, you know, have Jesus, you know, as the arbiter for them. But I thought there were entities in our government that would prevent it.
It takes government regulation to keep a marketplace from having participants in it that have market power, because every participant in a marketplace is going to try and increase their price and see whether they can hold that price or whether they will lose it because of competition. Okay. And that's the nature of a competitive marketplace. You charge the price that the market will pay and you test the market to see how much it will pay. And you test it until a competitor comes in and says, you know what, I'm going to undercut you and you're going to lose this business. And then you reduce your price.
So, but when you're allowed to do away with the competition, then the imbalance occurs.
Yes. So it's the marketplace that fails because of regulation of the marketplace has failed to regulate the market and make sure that it's competitive. That's why I've said, if I were a business person in America and I had the long horizon in view, I would want to make sure that there is adequate regulation of the marketplace to make sure that marketplaces are effective, because otherwise a defective market, first of all, could operate against me. I'm not sure I'm the controlling participant in the marketplace, number one. And number two, ultimately, the system fails.
Well, so Sandy, all of those things now point out to why the stock market has been booming and the people themselves have been struggling.
Well, the market booming is a little different, but the market booming and the people struggling is a phenomena, because it is true that assets can fly up in value. And if you don't own assets and all you have is the sweat off your back and the money you can make from the sweat off your back, you're in two different entirely circumstances. People in this country only get super wealthy as the result of owning assets and the value of those assets increasing dramatically. People don't get super wealthy, other than the CEOs of major corporations, by working day in and day out without accumulating assets. And that's the difference. So we've got these hard workers in the middle class, and unfortunately, because of the loss of benefits, which we've talked about before, the middle class is not thriving, even though the market, even though the economy is thriving.
All right. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
Just the other day. Ain't it funny? It's so funny how time can just slip right on away. I hate to leave you, baby, but I've gotta go now. Oh, I guess I'll see you somewhere around. But here's one thing you just can't tell. You don't know when, though. You never can tell when Joe Hinton will come back in town. But here's what I want you to do. Oh, please remember what I told you, that in time, you're gonna pay. Ain't it funny? It's funny how time slips away. Somewhere over the rainbow, it's way up high. There's a land that I once dreamed of, once in a lullaby. So when the dreams, the dreams that I once dreamed of, someday I hope they come true.
You know, Sandy, that was a great time for music.
Someday
I mean, well, you can tell because of how much of it's played today, you know, all the way to the late 50s, all of the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, the voices, the big bands behind them. I mean, I wasn't old enough or around. So every time I listen.
Don't sell yourself short.
Every time I was a kid at that point in time. But as I listen to these songs, they just, man. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. I mean, it's Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget it. Second, I just want to send my positive energy and prayers back out to Tom from yesterday that called in, and just I hope that he's doing better today.
Yeah, so do I.
Third, I feel like we're kind of skipping around in terms of the terminology that we're using today. And maybe it's just a disagreement, or Sandy is just trying to be a little bit nicer about it. But first off, Donald Trump, in a civil case, was actually convicted of rape, not sexual assault. Sexual assault sounds like a little bit less of a crime than rape does. And that's exactly what it was that he was convicted of in a civil case, was rape. Second, this is called monopolies. And we better start all getting it that these are called monopolies where one company owns everything. And we better start talking about corporate capture, where the guys that are in the Senate and the House and in the different governmental bodies then go and work for private companies like they did with the opioid problem. And I recommend everybody to watch Dope Sick on Hulu, because you'll see exactly how it happened. But it all comes down. And Sandy, if you want to explain the three cases, Buckley versus Vallejo under Ronald Reagan, First National Bank versus Bilotti under Ronald Reagan, and Citizens United under George War Criminal Bush, which were three Supreme Court cases that have taken government away from we the people and have given it to the people that now can bribe politicians to do what they need to do in order to win elections. It is very important that we start talking about this thing and stop being nicey-nice about how it is that we talk about. It's not subsidies. It's corporate welfare.
All right, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond?
I didn't know I was being nicey-nicey, but yeah, you know, the only thing about blaming the Supreme Court under Reagan, the Supreme Court was a liberal Supreme Court majority, not a conservative majority, but the Supreme Court has definitely run amok in its evaluation of expenditures in politics and the definition of a person for the purpose of determining how to regulate expenditures in politics and the right to expend money in politics. And of course, Citizens United is the one that's most clearly run amok in terms of that outcome. And it is money in politics that is relating to, for instance, what I just described, which is this market power of corporations, the ability to have control over prices, which is in some respects the term monopoly applies to that. Monopoly tends to mean there's only one, but there doesn't have to be only one supplier in order to have market power. There can just be too few, you know, not enough. And we've got that in too many industries now. There's, you know, that's why people talk about oligarchy. An oligopoly is not a monopoly. An oligopoly is a situation in which a market has too few providers, and therefore there is market power.
So, Sandy, with all of these things that you open our eyes to the average citizen, all I can think of is that the citizens are being manipulated, and we don't know that these things are going on. We don't know how to prevent it. I mean, to get it back to where it should be. It's like a train going down the track and it's gaining momentum, and there's nothing that the people can do to stop it. That's the frustrating part of all of this. The people are watching their lives being turned inside out and upside down. And they can't themselves, even though I hear Tom say we the people, they themselves can't do anything to correct it.
Well, they could if they could affect politics directly. The problem is the control, the political control
has been taken away.
Has been taken away because of money, and money in politics is, you know, Tom is right about that. Money in politics has been caused a huge change in the power of the vote. It's eroded the power of political parties, and it's eroded the power of participants in politics. So we elect people, and then what they do once they're elected is entirely different from what it was that was talked about during the election, because the election is kind of a charade. It's
right.
It's a charade in which people are told what they need to hear so that people get elected, and then their conduct during their period of incumbency tends not to relate very much to anything that people are interested in. And you know, the problem is that it's, when we say manipulation, we think of the Wizard of Oz behind a green curtain. It isn't one person or even a committee of people. It's the result of corruption.
It's not a system.
It's the result of a system that has lost the systemic controls that exist, for instance, in competitive marketplaces, which is the primary fundamental building block of the American economy.
All right, 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams and Earl Ingram on the Earl Ingram Show.
Birds fly over the rainbow. Oh, why? I said I